welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio sitting in for John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, July 24, 2023. As the conflict in Sudan reaches its 100th day, hostilities persist unabated.
The conflict has resulted in civilian casualties. We have received reports of serious human rights violations, including sexual violence in other protection risks that that faced by the civilians in Sudan.
And South Sudan's SPLM in opposition raises concerns about the country's 2023-2024 proposed budget.
If it's not budgeted for, that means we'll not have a constitution. And by the way, without a constitution, you cannot hold elections in this country. Why? After elections, you need to form a government. On what basis will any elected government be formed?
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Intense fighting continues in several parts of Sudan as the conflict between the country's army and paramilitary rapid support forces enters its 100th day. I spoke with Asadullah Nasrullah, the spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, who highlights the dire consequences this 100-day-long fighting has brought upon the civilian population.
It obviously had a devastating impact. First of all, on the civilians of Sudan, over 3 million people have been displaced within the country and also moved across the border to the neighboring countries in the region, including to Chad, Central Africa, Egypt, Ethiopia, in South Sudan. This includes more than 740,000 refugees and also refugees who were in Sudan before the conflict, mainly from South Sudan and some other countries who also returned back to their countries of origin. The countries where they returned to were also in difficult condition. In addition to that, 185,000 refugees who were hosted in Sudan were forced to flee and move from the states which were impacted by the conflict to safer areas inside Sudan. So, and also in total, I can say that 2.5 million people have internally displaced within Sudan. These are Sudanese displaced during these 100 days. So, as you can see, this is the impact that we can highlight only on the part of the displacement. But obviously, the impacts of the 100 days of conflict were beyond that. You know, the conflict has resulted in civilian casualties. Indeed, is also we have received reports of serious human rights violations, including sexual violence in other protection risks that that faced by the civilians in Sudan. We also have alarming reports of serious health and nutrition crisis that's unfolding in various parts of Sudan. There are reports of measles and malnutrition among the children inside Sudan. So this is how the picture
looks
like.
Yes, I saw that. I saw that many South Sudanese children living in Sudan, for example, White Nile State, have been hit by this measles outbreak. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have reports of nearly 300 South Sudanese children died because of the measles in malnutrition in White Nile State.
And of course, the human rights violations reported, which you were just telling me about, have been mostly reported in Khartoum, Kordofan, and Darfur, the areas hardest hit by the conflict. Is that what your reports say as well?
Exactly, because these are the areas, Khartoum and Darfur, in Darfur region and Kordofan region are the areas where hardly hit by the conflict, and therefore we have more human rights violations in these states and regions.
And Asadullah, you are working in, of course, you were forced to relocate, to move out of Khartoum of Sudan. You currently working from Istanbul in Turkey. But the humanitarians in Sudan are working in difficult conditions. Fighting is going on. Now we have the rainy season is setting in. What are some of the challenges your team faces on the ground? And tell me about the status of your funding.
First of all, on the humanitarian situation inside Sudan, yes, the space in the region that were hit hard by the conflict, it's very difficult for the humanitarian workers to operate. Accessibility is a serious challenge there. Although we continue to maintain our presence where it's possible, but in these states, if it's not possible, we continue to operate through the community. In terms of our funding, despite the needs and the urgency of the situation, the funding level has dropped. There was an appeal for the regional refugee response plan earlier, and there was an appeal for $566 million that which is needed by UNHCR and other partners for the regional refugee plan for Sudan and also to respond in the region. So far we have only 24% of funding received. That's across the region, but inside Sudan we have received only 23% of the funding that was required to respond in support people who were affected by the conflict, displaced people, but also refugees.
That's Asadullah Nasrullah, the spokesperson for UNHCR in Sudan. He spoke with me from Istanbul this past hour. And still on Sudan, the Sudanese army says a civilian airplane crashed shortly after taking off from the airport in eastern Sudan Sunday, killing 9 people, including 4 military personnel who were aboard the plane. A military statement said a child survived the crash in Port Sudan, a city located on the Red Sea. The military blamed a technical failure for the crash. Al-Tahir Abdurrahman, the secretary of Finance Minister Jibril Ibrahim, was among the dead, according to the minister who mourned his death on social media. Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have been battling for control of the country in the capital Khartoum and elsewhere since April 15th. Port Sudan has largely been spared the bloodshed. The sprawling region of Darfur has seen some of the worst bouts of violence in the conflict as the fighting has taken on ethnic dimensions. From Sudan, we move to South Sudan, where the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition is criticizing the proposed 2023-2024 fiscal year budget, saying it does not allocate sufficient funds for implementing the country's peace deal or upcoming elections. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
SPLMI or deputy chair says the drafted budget has not allocated funds to implement security arrangements, transitional justice process, or the permanent constitution-making process.
If it's not budgeted for, that means we'll not have a constitution. And by the way, without a constitution, you cannot hold elections in this country. Why? After elections, you need to form a government. On what basis will any elected government before in this country if there is no constitution?
Nathaniel says while the budget proposal has increased salaries for civil servants by 400%, that amount is still inadequate due to hyperinflation.
We know what the least person in the public service get, what the least person, the private, the soldier who is a private, we know how much he or she gets. It's actually less than 4,000. So if you multiply that one, time is 4, you still get just around
16.
Might be 16 if it is most, 16,000. What is 16,000 in the market? What is a kilo of meat in the market?
The budget proposal is 2.1 trillion South Sudanese pounds, or about 2.1 billion U.S. dollars. The draft budget was presented by the finance minister 3 weeks ago and is now in its second reading in the national parliament. The proposal allocates 50 billion South Sudanese pounds, the equivalent of 50 million U.S. dollars, for implementing the remaining tasks of the peace deal. Nathaniel says the allocation is not enough to implement the remaining critical tasks of the peace deal and may negatively affect the peace process, which includes conducting elections. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe insists money has been allocated for preparation of the election process.
It is the next budget, which is the next year, which will be the year of election. This year will provide sufficient funds for the elections. Not now. The funds that are available now are for establishment only.
The SPLM-IO, which holds the second largest share of positions in the unity government, denounced their proposed budget shortly after a meeting of the presidency held last Friday. A statement released by the Office of the President appealed to parties of the peace agreement and their parliamentary caucuses to unify their positions regarding the budget proposal. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu Nejuba.
A group of four South Sudanese female entrepreneurs and traders organized a monthly bazaar in the capital Juba over the weekend to help women sell their wares. A co-founder of the bazaar says the group has been strategizing the event for more than 3 months. Juliana Shapai has more for VOA from Juba.
The monthly bazaar brought together 39 women entrepreneurs and traders who sell bags, clothes, cosmetics, food, and handcrafts. The theme of the bazaar is, the success of every woman should be the inspiration to another. We should raise each other. Vendors say this kind of activity enables them to enjoy break from the daily routine. Monthly Bazaar co-founder Christine Meleng says the 2 days event helped her earn double what she normally makes in a week while selling from home.
My business is online, so to have a bazaar like this and to participate is really a blessing, because yesterday I sold almost $400. This is a lot of money. You cannot get it at by week, for example. And I have a lot of things are just inside home. So it's a really big difference for me.
Sylvia James, owner of Al Mahajir Travel Agency, says taking part in the monthly bazaar exposes women to more clients. She also encourages women to use social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram.
The difference is you get to introduce your business to people. You get to know other businesses in the market compared to yours. You get to know who is doing what.
Fidencia Foni George sells children's clothes. She says she would love to open a shop, but she's afraid of the expenses involved in such a venture.
Mostly when you rent a shop, okay, renting prices is also high. Again, city council, those things also disturb more. So it's better for me to sell at home because I'm just starting. So I want to fix my business. And then later on, I want to have a shop.
Meleng encourages all women selling goods from home to participate in the monthly bazaar so that they can network with other women and sell more products. For VOA News, I am Juliana Sherpai in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese Catholics celebrate the Vatican's appointment of a cardinal. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you believe in fate?
Yes, I do believe in fate. I do believe that once you have been given a particular purpose, fate will definitely make you get into it, whether you turn to the negative or the positive direction. Eventually, you get to achieve what has been planned for you.
Sometimes I do, because there are sometimes opportunities that comes unexpectedly, but sometimes I don't believe in it because everything is possible.
I don't believe in fate because I think once in life, no matter the family or your background, things can change. Your life had not been arranged in a certain way that you had to, no matter what, follow that change.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese refugees residing in a camp near the South Sudanese capital, Juba, say they carry trauma due to painful war experiences during the conflict in Sudan. Osman Omar says his six-year-old daughter has been deeply affected, refusing to eat and getting startled by loud sounds since they arrived at the camp in Juba. Another resident of the camp, Ibrahim Jamallah, says cases of people wailing and experiencing night terrors are widespread in the camp. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Osman Umar Mohammed, his wife and four children were caught up in the middle of gun battles when the fighting in Sudan spread to his hometown of Nyala in South Darfur State. Speaking to VOA at Gorom Refugee Settlement Thursday, Omar says his compound was hit several times by heavy artillery.
We were all under the bait and these children were crying and the fighting continued until 8 p.m. Again at 9 p.m. it continued with all bombs and bodies of people killed all around us. At 2 a.m. we decided to withdraw from the area. We headed southward into farmland and then children were starting to feel frightened and this is all because of insecurity.
Omar says although his family is now safe at Gorom Refugee Settlement in South Sudan, the memories of what happened is still disturbing his six-year-old daughter.
She has developed a spirit of fear. Her weight now at 6 years is the same as the weight of her two-year-old sister because she has refused to eat anything for 3 months. Right now, whenever she hears a sound, she feels frightened. Whenever a utensil drops down, she becomes afraid. This is the condition that I am in now with this girl.
Omar's daughter is not the only child traumatized by the effects of conflict in some parts of Sudan. Ibrahim Jamallah, another Sudanese refugee living in Gorom Refugee Settlement, says several refugees are living with memories of what they saw during the violence in Sudan.
There are people who jump up at night and run. Some people, while sleeping, just start to cry. People who don't have a strong heart are suffering because several people saw families killed at the same time in one place, including children. I saw them with my eyes and carried them in my arms when I was working at the hospital in Al-Fasha.
The UN report said at least 87 people, including ethnic Masalites, were buried in the mass grave accredited to the Rapid Support Forces. The paramilitary denied any involvement in the killing in El Geneina, where witnesses and rights groups report waves of attacks between the RSF and Arab militias against the non-Arab Masalit people, including shooting at close range. Afab Sherif Ahmed is another refugee at Gorom camp who says she saw some of her neighbors killed and several bodies littering on the street of Khartoum when she fled to South Sudan. She says the memories of what she saw on the street of Khartoum still lingers in her mind.
Several times, whenever I am sleeping, I feel like fighting has started again. I feel threatened at times. I just find myself crying at night. Many other people feel like me, especially those who saw a lot of bad things like me.
The Africa Committee for the Rehabilitation of Southern Sudan, or ACROSS, is partnering with the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, who provide humanitarian support to the Sudanese refugees at Gorom Refugee Settlement. Levi Moga is the program manager at ACROSS. He says the nonprofit is offering psychosocial support to Sudanese refugees traumatized by the effects of the conflict in Sudan.
We are having a protection team comprising of three caseworkers and protection assistant and a protection officer and a social worker. They are available in the camp there to provide psychosocial support, counseling, and also we have the psychologists on the staff. Most of the cases, some are confidential. I cannot disclose to you.
According to the South Sudan's Commission for Refugee Affairs, there are about 9,000 Sudanese refugees registered at Gorom Refugee Settlement, west of Juba Town. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
Excitement fills the hearts of Christians and clergy in the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek as Pope Francis appoints Archbishop Stephen Ameo Martimula of Juba Archdiocese as a cardinal. William Sunday Mabo reports from Rumbek Lake State.
Stephen Mangartem, a priest in the Diocese of Rumbek, says he is extremely excited over the news of the elevation of the Archbishop Stephen Ameo Martin by Rome. Father Stephen Mangar says the Holy See has chosen the right person in the Catholic Church in South Sudan as a cardinal. Mangar described Ameyu as a good leader who helped him and many other South Sudanese seminarians when they were in the major seminary studying philosophy in Khartoum.
He helped a lot of the students in theology and philosophy, and he was always with us. He was always encouraging us, especially I myself. If I am a Catholic priest today, I consider that the majority part which is who make me to become a priest is the one who helped me to reach this stage. We thank our Holy Father, Pope Francis, to promote this spiritual man, this peaceful man, the man who can direct the people, the man who helped the South Sudan and Sudan in a situation which he don't have any tribalism.
James Mayomrok is a parishioner at the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek. He says the appointment of the Archbishop Stephen Ameyo Martin Muller shows a strong connection between the Vatican and the South Sudanese.
We Christians of the Diocese of Rumbek, we are very happy. Since we hear it, Bishop Mayo was elevated to the cardinal, we are happy. And that one shows really that the Rome is close to us, we South Sudanese. And that one in the story will be the first cardinal in South Sudan in the Catholic Church.
Michael Denkwau, another parishioner at the Catholic Diocese of Rumbek, says he thanks the Holy Father, the love he has shown to Christians in South Sudan. Kwao says this appointment gives hope to South Sudanese that Rome is with them.
It is our privilege and my gratitude actually to hear the appointment of Stephen Ameyo as the Cardinal of South Sudan. This is a great news, and on behalf of the entire youth of Catholic Diocese of Rumbek, we are all happy to welcome his appointment.
Kwao says the appointment Ameyo comes with the benefit to South Sudan.
Whenever there are issues in the diocese, it will be very easy for the bishops to meet him in Juba, and this will also reduce the transport costs. Like when we have a cardinal for South Sudan and Sudan, bishops usually travel to Khartoum. They can only attend a meeting when there is a bishop conference.
Pope Francis appointed Archbishop Stephen Ameyo Martin Muller of Juba, a cardinal designated on 9 July, the date of South Sudan's 12th anniversary of independence. The 59-year-old Bishop Stephen Ameyo has been on the front of the peace and reconciliation. The cardinal-designated Ameyo Martin Muller will be among the 21 recipients of the Red Heart on September 30th. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor in Rumbek.
VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send us a voice message or a text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. That number again is +1 202 258 3076. And thanks for 60 years of support. And that's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Dudu by Ali Akiba.
Ndani vitendo si maneno maneno yunakupa kitengo kwa kufika malengo umeziba mapengo kwa upendo ebwana wana zingo anseni vikao vya sendo yeah. Maana mrembo nakujuza mama na shukuru ya kutibu wenyongo. No, ae. Mana, mrembo na kujuza.
We've been listening to Ali Akiba and the song Dudu. I am your host, Nabil Biagio, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Patrice Regis, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan Focus from the Voice of America.
An editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the recent NATO summit in Lithuania, President Joe Biden urged fellow alliance members to take the same spirit of unity, common purpose, determination that we have demonstrated in our response to Russian aggression in Ukraine, and bring more partners along as we continue working to build a world we want to live in. We have a choice to make, said President Biden.
A choice between a world defined by coercion and exploitation, where might makes right, or a world where we recognize that our own success is bound to the success of others.
President Biden said he has focused on revitalizing America's alliances around the world.
These past years, we brought the transatlantic partnership to new heights, reaffirming the importance of the relationship between Europe and the United States as an anchor to global stability. The idea that the United States could prosper without a secure Europe is not reasonable.
The United States has also deepened its alliance in the Indo-Pacific with Japan, the Republic of Korea, Australia, and the Philippines. Through the Quad Partnership, which includes Australia, India, Japan, and the United States, we're bringing major democracies of the region together to cooperate, keeping the Indo-Pacific free and open, prosperous, and secure, declared President Biden. President Biden urged building broad coalitions to strengthen and defend the international system grounded in the rule of law.
We have to come together to protect rights and freedoms, to underwrite the flow of ideas and commerce, and which have enabled decades of global growth. Yes, territorial integrity and sovereignty, but also principles like freedom of navigation and overflight, keeping our shared seas and skies open so that every nation has equal access to our global common space.
We stand at an inflection point, said President Biden, where the choices we make now are going to shape the direction of our world for decades to come. I believe that with nations working together for a common cause, declared President Biden, we can ensure the vision we share and the freedoms we cherish are not just empty words in a troubled time, but a roadmap toward a future we can reach if we work together.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.